WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you all had one fantastic weekend. Welcome to another episode of Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. There is so much that went on this weekend. The Lions topping the Browns, MSU taking care of Indiana, Michigan losing a thriller, an absolute thriller to Penn State, and the Tigers getting a rude awakening due to a Big Papi Grand Slam last night. And you know what? We want to get your opinion on all of it. Those that will automatically be entered into our random drawing to win two football tickets to this week's MSU-Purdue football game at Spartan Stadium. That's right. If you just give us a call at 517-355-9527, again, 517-355-9527, and give your thoughts on any of the weekend action with the Lions, Tigers, MSU, U of M, anything, you will be automatically entered into our random drawing for this weekend's MSU-Purdue football game at Spartan Stadium. Two tickets for you guys, again, whoever we choose during that random drawing. But to get your name entered, give us a call, 517-355-9527. This weekend was just crazy. So much going on, as always, here on Mondays at Current Sports. They're crazy trying to update you on all of what happened. but I also want to give a shout-out to all of you who showed up to the MSU Homecoming Parade. That was some fun stuff there. You guys showed WKAR some love at the Homecoming Parade on Friday night. Yes, I, along with the rest of the WKAR team, and Super Y, yes, walked the parade route. It was a fun time meeting you all and waving. My cheeks still hurt from all of the smiling I did, but man, it was a truly a fun time there. But let's get into today's show. We have, like I said, a lot to talk about. Here are your current sports headlines for this October 14th, 2013. The Boston Red Sox have tied the ALCS, and they did it in stunning fashion last night. David Ortiz smacked a huge grand slam homer in the eighth inning to tie the game up, sailing just beyond Torrey Hunter's reach. Torrey flew into the Red Sox bullpen head first. If you saw that, that crazy play. But Ortiz's grand slam erased an eighth inning deficit in Indy Detroit's unprecedented run of pitching dominance. Now, Max Scherzer, he struck out 13, and held Boston hitless for 5 2/3 innings. Boston's comeback came a few hours after Tom Brady threw a touchdown pass with 5 seconds left to complete the New England Patriots comeback over the New Orleans Saints. The score was greeted with cheers by Red Sox fans waiting for the baseball game to start. Now, Game 3 of the ALCS is in Detroit on Tuesday, when Justin Verlander will face Boston's John Lackey. Now, it was an unprecedented third consecutive playoff game in which a Tigers starter took a no-hit bid into the sixth inning. Crazy stuff there. So now everything's tied up. I couldn't believe when David Ortiz smacked that homer. It was just unbelievable moment right there, a moment that you just look at and just shake your head. You know, Ben Wye getting a lot of criticism today. We're definitely going to talk about that later on in today's show. Again, 517-355-9527 if you have any thoughts on that game. The Lions and Browns. Matthew Stafford threw 3 of his 4 touchdown passes after halftime, rallying Detroit to a 31-17 win over the Browns on Sunday. Now, Stafford finished 25-43 for 248 yards. Cleveland's Brandon Whedon, making his first start since week 2, finished 26-43 for 292 yards. Now, the Lions outscored the Browns 24-0 in the second half, sealing their win when Stafford hooked up with rookie tight end Joseph Fourier with 201 left. Now, the 6'7" Fourier caught 3 touchdown passes for the Lions, who played like a completely different team in the second half when leaving the field down 17-7 and looking just really out of it, just lifeless, to tell you the truth. Now, Lions running back Reggie Bush, he finished with 135 total yards, 121 in the second half. At halftime, Lions coaches say that Chris Durham talking about Stephen Tulloch. He said that Stephen Tulloch addressed the team and kind of, you know, gave a speech that was definitely memorable. He said, Durham went on to say, quote, "He got up in front of us and said a few words that he needed to say like a team leader would. I think it got us fired up and ready to go for the second half. So then he was asked what Tulloch said, and Durham went on to say, quote, team stuff. So that team stuff speech definitely worked, and the Lions are like a completely different team in that second half. Also want to note this, Matthew Stafford has 13 games with at least 3 touchdown passes now, breaking Bobby Lane's team record. In Lions cornerback Rasheem Mathis, he left in the first half with a groin injury and didn't return. All right, MSU and Indiana. Jeremy Langford scored 4 touchdowns. Michigan State recovered from an early defensive breakdown to beat Indiana 42-28 on Saturday. The Spartans prevailed in a matchup between their top-ranked defense and Indiana's fast-paced offense. Now, Tevin Coleman, he scored on a 64-yard TD run for the Hoosiers just 61 seconds into the game. But Michigan State, they took control shortly after. And once that first score happened, I'm sitting there saying to myself, this is not a good start for this MSU team, especially against an offense like that that is so fast-paced for the Spartans. But, you know, they ended up, that was one of those moments that you look at, and it says a lot about this MSU team and where they can be, to tell you the truth. Now, Connor Cook, 22, he went 22 of 31 for 235 yards with 2 interceptions and 2 touchdowns, excuse me, 2 touchdowns and an interception. Jeremy Langford finished with 109 of Michigan State's 238 yards on the ground. The Spartans retained the old brass platoon. That's right, they've won 5 straight against Indiana now, and haven't lost to the Hoosiers at home since 2001. That's a long time. All right, Michigan and Penn State. Bill Belton's 2-yard touchdown run in the fourth overtime finally sealed a 43-40 win over Penn State. As Penn State tops Michigan in probably the wildest game of the weekend. Now, after tying it up in the final seconds with a Christian Hackenberg 1-yard TD run, Michigan kicker Brendan Gibbons, he missed a game-winning field goal with 2 seconds left. Now, unfortunately for Gibbons, it was only the beginning. Now, both teams went scoreless in the first and third overtimes, including 2 more missed field goals by Gibbons. One of them was blocked. Now, Penn State attempted a key 4th-and-1 in the final overtime, converting on their way to the overtime's lone touchdown. Now, Michigan's Devin Gardner and Penn State's Christian Hackenberg each had 3 touchdowns and 2 interceptions, but they were just setting the table for an amazing overtime finish in Penn State's biggest win of the season. Bill O'Brien, head coach of Penn State, afterwards said, quote, nothing should amaze you. There's going to be twists and turns. These are tough kids. They love Penn State. They love playing for each other. The locker room is such a great scene right now because these kids really believe in each other. Bill O'Brien has done one heck of a job with that program. And so, yeah, Michigan gets a loss there, folks. All right, MSU volleyball recap. Michigan State leads the Big Ten Conference volleyball standings after a 4-set win against Nebraska on Saturday in East Lansing. Now, the 7th-ranked Spartans used a balanced attack to beat number 9 Nebraska in 4 sets in front of a whopping 4,228 fans. Shout out to all of you who attended that. Now, Nebraska and Michigan State each entered the match undefeated in conference play as Big Ten co-leaders. The Spartans kicked off the weekend in a 3-0 sweep against Iowa on Friday. Michigan State has won 15 straight matches and is off to its best start since 1995. So a huge shout out to the Michigan State volleyball team. MSU soccer, the Michigan State men's soccer team kept their unbeaten Big Ten record intact, but didn't get the victory over they were hoping for, getting a 1-1 tie with Ohio State. Now, despite outshooting the Buckeyes 36-20, yes, 36-20 over the course of the game, and getting a goal from Adam Montague, the Spartans just couldn't find a way to beat keeper Alex Ivanovov to seal the win. Now, Adam Montague said after the game, I thought we definitely created enough chances to win the game. Not being able to score early really put pressure on us defensively. We couldn't put players forward, and we found ourselves defending for the last 25 minutes. Now, the Spartans are now slated to play at home against rival Oakland and league-leading Penn State before hitting the road to take on 20th-ranked Akron. AP top 25 update. The top 25 had one of the biggest shakeups of the season thus far after 7 ranked teams fell on Saturday. Now, some teams like Washington and Florida remained in the top 25 after losing to higher-ranked competition. Michigan and Northwestern, on the other hand, fell from the rankings after losing to unranked conference opponents. Now, the SEC has 8 teams in the AP top 25. No other conference has ever had that many ranked teams in 1 week of the regular season poll. So, interesting stuff there. Jeff Long, college football playoff picture is starting to really to take shape, but with BCS on its way out, the College Football Playoff Selection Committee has selected its first chairman. And that is Arkansas AD Jeff Long. That's right. The committee, which includes star-studded names like Condoleezza Rice, Tyrone Willingham, Barry Alvarez, Tom Osborne, and others, will officially be announced on Wednesday. Now, the committee seems confident in Long's appointment. Playoff Executive Director Bill Hancock said that Jeff has a vast experience in college football. People in intercollegiate athletics hold him in high regard. He is known for his insight, intelligence, wisdom, wit, judgment, and calm demeanor. He'll make a great chairman. Now, the committee is tasked with choosing the 4 teams in advance to the college football playoff after next season. So, interesting stuff there. All right, and Trey Burke. Trey Burke cut his night short in the preseason game against the LA Clippers by heading to the training room for x-rays with an apparent finger injury. Now, as the team awaits an appointment with a hand specialist on Monday, it remains to be seen how soon he'll be back. Now, Burke's camp is hopeful he will be back in 3 to 6 weeks. And although his quickest return timeline would have him out for the 2013-2014 season opener on October 30th. There are some, however, who believe Burke's injury will take at least 6 weeks to heal. Now, if the specialist recommends surgery, the point guard could be out even longer. So until Burke returns, the starting point guard role will be handled by veteran John Lucas, the third, one of the Jazz's offseason acquisitions. So there you have that. We'll see how it's random injury for Trey Burke there. But those are your current sports headlines for this October 14th, 2013. Comment on any of those by calling 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527, and you will be entered into our drawing for 2 tickets for this week's Purdue and Michigan State football game. Again, give us a call, 517-355-9527. You guys got to bear with me today because, oh man, it was a long weekend, a little sick, a little raspy, as you can hear it in my voice, struggling a little bit here. But yeah, again, 517-355-9527. We'll talk about anything on your mind. But right now, we are going to get into the MSU and Indiana football game. MSU, again, they topped Indiana 42-28, and an impressive win, very impressive win. Anytime you talk about the MSU offense putting up 42 points, that's certainly an eye-opener there. You know, when I looked at this game, something that really stood out to me was a lot of young guys on this MSU football team are really stepping up. And, you know, making their presence known. A lot of playmakers, too, on this team that are really starting to shine a little bit. Now, of course, you know, I got to shout out Jeremy Langford, who was great this past weekend. He had 23 rushes for 109 yards, 3 touchdowns on the ground, and he had one touchdown as a reception. So he is the first MSU player to score 4 TDs in a game since Edwin Baker back in 2010. Unbelievable stuff right there. So Jeremy Langford definitely did work. Connor Cook was great. And when, you know, I talk about these young guys stepping up, though, I want to also talk about, you know, true freshman Delton Williams. RJ Shelton had a very good game. Josiah Price at the tight end position. They look great. I mean, freshman and sophomores actually caught 13 of Cook's 22 completions for 123 yards of that 235 total yardage. So freshman and sophomores, folks. You know, carrying, you know, that's about 70 to 80% of the weight of Cook's passes through the air were taken by freshmen and sophomores. And that's saying a lot for this team. And, you know, I think they definitely made a lot of strides. And, you know, I'm also joined by Matt and Alex right now, guys. And, you know, something for me, I think this game was kind of one for validation for me, because you look at that Iowa game and you looked at that team and you said, okay, they seem to be putting it together here. Can they do it the next week? How consistent can they be? And for a minute, you know, I got a little nervous after watching that Tevin Coleman 64-yard TD. I said to myself, uh-oh, this doesn't look good. But the way that MSU's offense responded throughout that game was pretty impressive, to say the least. You know, when you look at Connor Cook, I thought he was very, very comfortable. He looked very confident and comfortable in just picking and choosing the spots. Langford on the ground was great. But yeah, the way they responded to that deficit and, you know, putting 42 points up now this week, it's kind of showing me that Iowa, you know, game wasn't a fluke for me in my eyes. So,
yeah, and then, you know, the Coleman touchdown, it looked like a bit of a homecoming hangover for MSU. And they definitely responded. And the first few drives, a little bit slow out of the gate. Then they started to put things together. And like you said, I mean, you have to take everything with a grain of salt against Indiana, especially in terms of MSU's offense, just because Indiana is really bad defensively. But at the same time, you can't deny that guys are starting to step up. Guys are starting to make plays. I mean, you know, did you hear anything about any drops this weekend?
No.
Those questions are in the past. Yeah. The receivers have moved on. They're starting to produce. Everybody's starting to produce. You know, Kings, Lippitt, Fowler had some catches. His touchdown was awesome. Yeah, Price making a play down the field. He actually got a downfield throw to a tight end. They're putting the pieces in place to succeed. The schedule is favorable for now. I think they just got to keep building the confidence so that when we get into November, they're going to be ready to play, and hopefully the offense can carry the defense like the defense has carried everybody so far.
Right.
And I'm wondering, because there were a few drops, but I think the reason why it wasn't a conversation is because there were 42 points. Do you think that the fact that MSU brought more than 40 points for the first time all year kind of limited? Like, let's say they only scored 28.
Well, they scored 55 against Youngstown.
That's right.
I was about to bring that up too. I'm looking at the schedule.
But I guess against more of a relevant opponent, 42.
Right.
But if they didn't score more than 30 points and the receivers did drop a couple, would still be a conversation?
No, I think, you know, like you said, 42, like you said, Al, that's a lot of points, you know, to put on the board. And I think, you know, if you're scoring 42 points, I mean, there are going to be drops here and there. You know what I mean? But throughout that game, there were no alarming drop passes. There were no alarming moments like that where you said
no touchdown.
Here
drops.
We go again. Yeah. There were no. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, it was very impressive. Now it seems like, you know, Aaron Burbridge and McGarrett Kings are Jr. are becoming like Cook's, you know, go to guys now. And those are two young guys that, like I said, have a lot of playmaking potential. I mean, of course, McGarrett, I believe he had the muff punt, right, that turned into a touchdown for Indiana. But, I mean, that's really McGarrett's. This is like his, what, second game, you know, being the guy, you know, for, you know, the punt return guy. So, I mean, that's going to happen. You know, those are growing pains that you got to deal with young players. But overall, I was pleased.
Yeah.
I was pleased
with how about R.J. Shelton's touchdown? Did you guys see that one?
Nice,
That was just explosive out of nowhere.
Right. Not quite a Le'Veon hurdle, but a good hurdle nonetheless.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, you got all these young guys on this team, though, showing that, hey, you know, that they're around and can make big plays when need be. And like you say, but you got to take it with a grain of salt. It is Indiana, but at the same time, I think it does a lot. You know, I always talk about confidence. Confidence is so big, I think, in sports in general. And for this MSU team who – you know, had all these question marks, you know, talking about week two and week three, who's going to be the quarterback? They're not scoring enough on offense. And now you have a game like this where you just totally explode offensively. It does a lot for you just to see, you know, the ball cross the goal line. And they saw that a lot this past weekend. And I'm very pleased. I think Jeremy Langford should be talked about a lot more. Because Jeremy, you know, a guy, you know, when you're trying to fill the shoes of Le'Veon Bell, who here, when he was here, I mean, he got the most carries in college football all of last season. And you talk about trying to fill the shoes of that man who was MSU's offense last season, and you come out and you have a performance like you did yesterday. And I think all around, MSU's backfield as far as the running back position has been pretty solid, if you ask me. You know, if anything has been solid throughout this season for this MSU offense, I think it is the running backs. They haven't been outstanding at times, but they haven't been bad where it's like, what is going on here? And Jeremy Langford I think he has a bright future with this. I believe Jeremy's a junior, if I'm not mistaken. But, yeah, he looked great. 23 rush yards, 109 yards. Well, 23 rushes, excuse me, for 109 yards, four touchdowns. Again, that's the first time that's been done since Edwin Baker back in 2010. And, you know, MSU has really just owned Indiana, you know, these past years. Again, that's five straight against Indiana. Haven't lost to the Hoosiers at home since 2001. So they definitely have Indiana's number. I'm just curious to see, you know, how this Big Ten race now, you know, fits out, how it runs out. Because now you got Michigan and you got Nebraska and Michigan State. So you have a three-way tie at the top of the Legends right now, all at 5-1, I believe. So right now, to see how this plays out, and, you know, Michigan, I'm pretty sure there are so many Spartan fans that were cheering when that happened, when they looked across there, you know, with the update on their phone and saw that Michigan fell to Penn State. Because now, you know, we went from, and it's so funny how the vibe changes a lot, because, you know, a few weeks ago, we were sitting there talking about the Michigan State football team with a lot, you know, just like, what is going on here? What in the world? You know, in panic almost. We even asked a question here on Current Sports. Is it panic mode? Is it panic time for the Michigan State football team? And now you look at the record, and they can go ahead and win the Legends Division.
Al, we were talking about Antonio's future
for a
second.
Yeah, exactly. We were losing our minds over here, you know, getting our stuff in a bunch, as they say, you know. But and now the conversation has totally shifted to how good can this team be. It's so funny, man. I thought about that this morning, you know, being in D'Antonio's shoes, being in a head coach's shoes, where when you're going through a moment like that where you got everybody talking about you, all this adversity, I can't imagine dealing with that pressure. And it, you know, in sports, it's always, you know, the motto is, what have you done for me lately? You know what I mean? Especially in football, because you only got a week to do it. You know what I mean? You only have one game a week. It's not like basketball where you can change someone's perception of your team the very next day because you have another game then. Football, you only get one day a week to do it. And MSU to start this season did not look good. And we're harping on D'Antonio. I thought Mark D'Antonio did a great job of just keeping his composure and sticking to his guns and saying, hey, we're going to find our guy just week by week. You know what I mean? He did a good job of sort of dodging the bullets. And, you know, now we're seeing, you know, we're asking ourselves, what's the ceiling for this Spartan team? Again, the Big Ten isn't great by no means.
Right.
They are a bad conference. But it's a great year for MSU to be in this conference with all, you know, finally settling in on a quarterback now. It's a great year. If you're going to have a year with a lot of question marks and try to just find yourself as a team, this is the season to do it, because the Big Ten is not great. And MSU, you know, kind of, you know, can play just, you know, these lollipop games against a team like, you know, Indiana, the week before that against a team like Iowa, and just kind of, you can find yourself as the season goes on. And if you're gonna have a season to do that, this is the season to do it. And I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they have as good a shot as anybody in the Legends. And, you know, part of the reason everybody was so frustrated at the beginning of the year was last year. I mean, we were so bad offensively last year. We lost so many close games, and we had such a good defense that it was tough to fathom how they could continue to fall short in the final moments of a game.
Right.
And then we open up this year, and the offense looks no better. And then people did start reaching for the panic button. But, you know, as Cook kind of established himself as the guy,
right,
I think the offense gained confidence. And, you know, you look at the numbers, they had 11 different guys catch the ball.
That's like, you know, a Peyton Manning
you
resume.
You see, like look down the road at Michigan.
Yeah.
And it's just everything goes to Jeremy Gallen or Devin Funchess. And if they can't get them the ball, they're in trouble.
Yeah.
But you look at this, and 11 different guys are catching the ball. It's not just that, you know, one or two guys are stepping up. It's that everybody's raising their level of play.
Right.
It's improvement across the board. It's night and day from a month ago.
Yeah.
I mean, they look like a different team offensively.
Yeah.
And you got to be feeling confident. I know that the competition hasn't been great. I think Iowa's a better team than people think. I think that win is going to be good going down the road, just because they're tough to beat at home, and the Spartans handle them. Indiana remains to be seen. But at the same time, they're winning these games. Guys are stepping up everywhere. I mean, freshmen are popping up, like you said. Shelton, Williams.
Right.
I mean, everybody's contributing, and you know, they're moving in the right direction. At the very least, they're improving. It's tangible improvement. You can see it on the field.
Yeah, you can. And you can see, you know, looking at Cook, like I said, I talk about the two C's all the time, man. You know, confident. He looks very confident and comfortable back there now. And, you know, that's something where he can relax now. And we can put that question to bed.
He's cooking.
He's cooking it up, baby. And, you know, and that's something that you could definitely look at. If there was any negative aspect I could look at that game on Saturday, just to harp on anything, it had to be, for me, probably the 10 penalties for 100 yards.
Yep.
MSU knows that they've had troubles this season as far as, you know, the yellow flag goes. And 10 penalties, that's a lot of penalties. those, I mean, just imagine if you're playing another team and it's a close game. 100 yards can mean a difference in a winner or a loss. And if there's anything I will harp on, it will be that. They got to clean it up. You know, guys got to be more alert out there. Again, you talk about, you know, when you talk about, you know, I talk about the how young they are. You got a lot of young guys stepping up and making plays. That's that inexperience, you know, sometimes that when you're out there, you may get a false start or something like that. That's the experience you got to deal with. And but that's definitely has to clean up as the season goes on. And I'm sure Mark D'Antonio is in his team's ear saying, hey, we can't have that many penalties if we're going to start once we start getting into the thick of our season and playing bigger and better teams as it goes on. Because those penalties right there can win you or lose you games. So, but yeah, again, we're encouraging you all out there. Give us a call, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Comment on really any of the weekend action that went on, the Tigers, MSU football, Michigan losing to Penn State, Lions and Browns. If you give us a call, your name, yes, your name will be entered in our drawing for two tickets to this weekend's Purdue and Michigan State football game at Spartan Stadium. Yes, your name could be entered. 517-355-9527. We gave away two pairs of tickets last week, so if you want us to go see that game this weekend, give us a call. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about Tigers, Lions, Michigan. Don't go anywhere. Again, 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. More current sports is coming right back.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, urban explorer Moses Gates has climbed the pyramids, toured the Paris catacombs, and explored the sewers of Rome.
The sewers are nicer than you might think they are. I'll just put that out there. A lot of them are really lovely. You know, a lot of them are constructed in the 19th century, have beautiful brickwork.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen, and you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports, as always. I'm your host, Al Martin. We just finished talking about the Michigan State football team. Of course, MSU, they topped Indiana in the homecoming game on Saturday, 42-28, getting the dub there. So now we're going to shift because we had tons to talk about here. So much happened over the weekend, including last night's Tigers and Red Sox game, guys. Man, what a moment. You know, as a casual fan, watching that game and watching that grand slam, wow. You just say wow. As a Tigers fan, you're saying ow. Because that's, we talk about a grand slam. In the eighth inning, Max Scherzer pitches a gem. Unbelievable. Max Scherzer was great. He was great. And you know what? I think even though it's report saying that, you know, Max, you know, he said that he couldn't go anymore. He knew that he was done, you know, near the end of that game. And he said he wanted to come out. I have a strong feeling, though, that if Max, even if he would have gutted it through, I think we would have talked about a W here. I don't know. No one was hitting on Max Scherzer that night. I don't
right. know. Right. And, you know, what's he supposed to say? You know, is he supposed to call out his manager and
exactly.
cause a big clubhouse ruckus?
He's got to say that, right?
Yeah, that's the company. You have to say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, you can definitely second guess some of the things they were doing in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
It was just a symphony of errors and just terrible. And you could
right.
just kind of feel it coming. You could feel the game changing. And as soon as Ortiz steps up there, I mean, your mind immediately goes to this guy's going to make a huge play. And sure enough, first pitch, he just
gone.
Crushes it.
Crushes
His numbers
it,
weren't even that And that is astounding against the Tigers. It's not like he's killed the Tigers in the past either.
No, but it's playoff baseball, right. And it's David Ortiz.
Yeah, it's David Ortiz.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, I was just shocked at that. I thought,
right.
No way at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, well, we have a caller right now. Jack from Lansing, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine on a beautiful Monday and a whole Sunday full of good things, and as you... and something really bad, as in the Tigers. I couldn't agree more with what you just, your analysis. But, you know, as I replay that back over in my head numerous times, how could you go from one moment we're sitting there cheering for a possible no-hitter?
Yeah.
I remember making the comment to the family, and I had some friends over, and I said, I got to stay with this because I said, there's an outside chance we're going to get a, not only are we going to win the game, we're going to get a no-hitter out of it. And,
right.
Car wreck.
Right. Yeah, it was. And, you know, it was go ahead, Jack. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I just wanted to say I agree with you guys about, you know, what you just, your analysis of Scherzer. I personally will never know, but I think he just gave the company line there.
Yeah.
He was throwing 95-mile-an-hour fastballs. He was in total control when he left that game. Plus, he had a little bit of a break in between. I don't. He could have come back out for that other inning, but you know, it's the way it is nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
right? That's baseball now.
Everybody's into the pitch count, and everybody's into guy can't go any further, and we got this guy we're paying X amount of dollars for, and after all, he only pitches the eighth inning. Then we got our other guy for the night, and it's just too orchestrated that way, and disaster was around the corner. It was terrible. A secondary comment to the whole thing that I listened to a variety of shows this morning I hadn't heard, and maybe it's just me, and maybe they have talked about it, and I didn't hear it, but Torrey Hunter.
Mm.
Now, remember early in the game when I can't remember who it was for Boston, hit a ball out to right, and it was kind of a high ball. It was early. It was maybe a first or second inning, and they thought the sound of the bat and everything that was going out, and it didn't. It held up. Do you remember Torrey Hunter was running way over in the corner for it and then stopped and had to come back for it?
You remember that? I remember that moment. You guys remember that?
Yeah, he almost overran it.
Almost overran it. He had to turn around and come back for it.
Mm.
Well, I saw just an inkling of that in this in the home run by Pablo Grande that it looked to me like if he'd have taken a slightly different angle, that was a catchable ball.
It did, because the way Torrey went after that ball, I think the ball actually landed in back of him, I believe.
Actually, the catcher in the Red Sox bullpen just caught it.
Yeah, I mean,
he just turned and catches a home run, which is pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah.
And he reached up and was reaching out to his right as he went past it.
Right, yeah, Torrey just kind of, I think he just misplayed the ball when you look at that, you know? And because I think it was definitely a catchable ball.
It would have been the most amazing catch ever, though. Yeah. I don't think you can just say it's his fault.
No, not at all.
I mean,
I'm just saying.
He
put
that thing on a rope.
Right. Yeah.
No, I don't want to do that. That's not my goal.
But you're just saying it was probably a catchable ball. If he would have had a chance at it if he played it a little different.
Yeah. He catches that ball. We got a hold. I mean, he's now a hero.
That's SportsCenter top 10. That's number one on SportsCenter if he catches that.
You know, that play is going to be on every sports show everywhere.
Right. If he makes that catch. Exactly. So, hey, Jack, thanks so much for the call. Yep. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So, but yeah, if Torrey Hunter, from the looks of it, because Torrey in the wipeout was crazy. I think he was in the dugout for a while after he flew over, because he flies over it head first, lands on his head, I think, tumbles over. But yeah, if he would have played a better angle, I think he would have had a chance, you know, at catching it. But he's not. That would have been one heck of a catch. But
for a 38-year-old, no less,
right?
To go out there and make that play.
I mean, he
would be like the legend of the series.
38 years old, and you got to go out there and make something like that. That's crazy. But, you know, going back to his comment on Scherzer, I mean, we talked last week about how in a game of baseball, I mean, it was normal. If a pitcher had it going, you knew he was pitching the whole game. You know, he was going the distance and pitching nine. Nowadays, it's not like that. The game's not like that. If you get high in the pitch count, I believe he had 108 pitches at that point. And, you know, he kind of – I think he gave the company line at that. I think he wanted to keep going, but that, you know, seeing as Jim Leland wanted to take him out, you know, he had to back up Jim's decision and say, hey, you know, yeah, right. I wanted to come out. And I think it is direct quote, so I don't quote him wrong. He says, Scherzer was asked if he knew he was done after seven. Scherzer says, yeah. Reporter says, so, no discussion. Scherzer says, quote, I told them I was done. They wanted me done. They had it all lined up how they wanted to approach the eighth inning. Now, Scherzer was asked again whether he could have gone back out to pitch the eighth. He goes on and says, no, I was done. You can write that. I was done. Everybody, they wanted me done. I was done. I was not going out there for the eighth. So, he was done. Right. That's baseball nowadays, though. But I think if Scherzer wasn't done and he would have played those last two innings, we'll be sitting here having a totally different discussion, because the way Scherzer was pitching that entire game, it was masterful. I mean, no one could hit the man. I believe he had two hits off him the whole day, I think. 13 strikeouts, two hits. He was unbelievable. And that was just one of those moments. Go ahead, Alex.
No, guys, I totally agree. I mean, from the Hunter Ball game changer to the fact that Scherzer got pulled a little early, all very relevant. But what I think is even the bigger issue here is the fact that what seemed to be our biggest issue at the start of the season, without Rondon at closer,
yes,
is now prevalent.
Yeah.
And Benoit, after a solid hold of the first game, the 1-0 shutout, this game, I'm downing Benoit now.
I've been downing Benoit this entire season that he's been in, to be honest with you. I mean, if you look at game one, was really special, to be honest with you, because you had four pitchers. Anibal Sanchez, Al Albuquerque, Jose Veras, Drew Smyly came in. I mean, and it could have been the first collective no-hitter that's ever happened in baseball postseason history, which that really blew my mind. I thought, all these years baseball has been, I thought, you know, that would have happened at least once. But, I mean, that could have been history right there. But great game, you know, by the relievers there. But Benoit, I think he gave up a hit in that game, I believe, in game one, you know, when everybody else seemed great. And, you know, you bring him in, he has not been great, guys. He has been one of those question marks that you never know what you're going to get when he's out there on the mound. He's been inconsistent, very inconsistent. And to see a gem like what Max Scherzer pitched yesterday, and to see it completely wasted, and just like that, in the blink of an eye, one inning, boom. Tie game, now you're sweating. Just to see that wasted, it's got to be so discouraging for starting pitchers who go out there and work their butt off the entire game, and to see the game just totally take this crazy turn due to this. And it just puts a lot of doubts in a lot of minds, because, I mean, the Tigers don't have a closer, guys. They don't have a closer, in my mind.
What if this game draws seven games, and this game is the determining factor? The fact that Benoit, like, what's the bigger story? Is it that Benoit blew the game? Or is it the fact that Scherzer got pulled and could have stayed in the game?
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I don't know if you can put it all on Benoit just because he came in, he threw one pitch. I mean, he came in through one pitch, and that was it.
But Matt, he has not been great, man.
No, I'm not saying that he has been. I'm just saying it's tough to put the entire loss on him because he made one pitch and got taken yard by Big Poppy, one of the best postseason hitters, you know, in the league right now for sure, and a Boston legend. But
yeah,
it's just it was tough to just see them. It almost seemed like panic mode in the eighth, just going from reliever to reliever. You know, guys would get an out, they'd put a guy on base, they'd pull him right away.
Right.
And I know you're playing matchups.
But they're in panic, you know?
You're playing lefties versus lefties, but at a certain point, you just got to trust somebody.
Right. Right.
To get the job done. They needed one Leland out.
You put that on Leland?
I would put it on him more than Benoit, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, Benoit, you know. Came in, left one over the plate, Poppy took it yard.
Yeah, you know, it's something for the Tigers as they go in, whatever plays out this season. They have to get a closer. You know, they can't, you know, the thing has been, it's been so frustrating because that's, I mean, they even brought in, like, I go back to when they brought in Jose Valverde, you know. You're bringing Papa Grande. They're that desperate when you got to go back and bring in Papa Grande just to see what happens.
Right.
I mean, it's been a huge one of those things. You look at the Tigers saying, okay, they have great starting pitching. You know, you got Miguel Cabrera, Prince Fielder, you know, just great. And then all of a sudden you look at this one aspect of the team that's just been a, you know, one of those things you look at and it's been a hindrance for this team for a while. And, you know, it came to really bite him in the butt yesterday, I thought. But, yeah, that does, you know, have to come down to Jim Leland as well. You got to, at some point, you do got to trust somebody and say, all right, even if you are in a jam, let's see if he can get out of it. Of course, he trusts guys like, you know, a starting pitching staff like Max Scherzer, who got out of that, you know, bases-loaded jam against the A's that one game. He trusts him to get out of that, and he has never got out of a bases-loaded jam before that game. But he trusts him. He went out there. He handled his business. And, man, who do you trust, though? I guess that's the question I'm asking you guys. Who can you trust as far as, you know, relief goes for this Tigers team?
Right, and I think the other question is, at one point, does pitch count not matter anymore?
Right.
This is the ALCS.
Exactly.
If you know, he stays in, pitches that game out, and we win, there's a chance he doesn't have to pitch again for the rest of the series.
Because
they're coming
totally
home for three, and you have Verlander going in game three.
Right.
And then you just need one more win, and that's it.
Exactly. I think that's a very good argument right there, Matt, because, you know, when you talk about – now, I think it would have been different if a pitcher's been out there for a while and he's complaining, saying, man, I can't go anymore, Jim. Take me out. If that was the case, which I don't think it was the case here, I just think Jim said, okay, we got to rest Scherzer a little bit just in case I need him down the line. And then he took him out. And I don't think Max is a competitive guy, very competitive guy. He's kind of like him. Verlander is too. I mean, those guys, if they got it going, leave them out there. Keep it going. You know what I mean? I think that was one of those situations where Jim said, okay, let me rest him because I may need him down the line. Let me take him out. But, yeah, at what point is too much for a pitcher?
Right, because they say, you know, you keep the pitch count low because you're saving him for the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's where we are right now. What are you saving him for?
You go all out in the playoffs, man. It's winner. It's
do
or die,
time.
Baby.
Yeah.
It's do or die, yeah.
I mean, winners want the ball.
Right.
I'm 100% sure Scherzer wanted to stay out there and keep pitching.
Right, exactly. So, you know, it's one of those things that you got to, I don't know, that's a managerial decision, and I didn't agree with it last night. I'm sure half of the world didn't agree with it last night. And but, yeah, 108 pitches for Max in that game. So the Tigers now, the series now shifts in Detroit. JV will be on the mound on Tuesday. And what are you guys predicting in that game? What do you think? I think JV pitches another gem.
Yeah, the thing was, the last game was just so perfect and so surprising. I just don't think people are just going to be as surprised. I feel like people are going to be expecting the same performance, the same performance he had before.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're facing a Boston team compared to an Oakland team with very different personnel and very different kind of hitters, I don't know.
Yeah, and JV's postseason stats are great, but it's skewed because he is like unhittable against the A's. Like he's not a world beater against everybody else in the playoffs. He's been kind of average, but
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The A's really, really skew the numbers. But I think I don't know what to think. I don't know what to think about Game Three.
It's so open air. You gotta love playoff baseball because I mean, you know, a game that looked like the Tigers had it. Max is pitching well. They can't hit on the man. You're like, okay, we just got two more innings to go. I mean, this is solid here. You know, the Tigers got this one. And then just one moment, you know what I mean? It wakes me up out of my – because I actually fell asleep while the Tigers got this. And all of a sudden, my phone goes off. Thank God for Score Center. Thank you, Score Center. Score Center wakes me up, and it's like, yeah, David Ortiz just hits a grand slam, game tied. What? Are you serious? You know, you got to love baseball because I love playoff baseball because of moments like that where it's so unpredictable game by game. I will predict, though. I think that Justin Verlander, he's so good in the playoffs. I think he comes out, pitches a solid game, and the Tigers win, I think, by two or three runs. I say two runs. Tigers win by two runs tomorrow. But we'll see. You never know, man. It's playoff baseball. Give us a call, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. 95-27. Give us your thoughts on the Tigers. Give us your thoughts on Lions, Michigan, Michigan State this weekend. So much going on. If you give us a call, you could win two football tickets to this weekend's MSU and Purdue football game at Spartan Stadium. You want to win those, right? Give us a call. 517-355-9527. We're going to take a quick break. Come back. We'll talk Lions, folks. And we'll also have Pick 'em Mondays for you. Talk a little bit of high school football. So much to get to. Don't go anywhere. More current sports coming right back.
You count on All Things Considered for many reasons. The biggest stories of the day, from around the world to your own backyard. The thoughtful commentaries, the insightful features, or all of the above. All Things Considered has been your trusted source for news every afternoon. I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered, and glad to be a part of this show. I'll see you at 4 this afternoon.
Welcome back to Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. Thank you guys for tuning in each and every day. Just finished talking about the Tigers game. Yeah, it's tied up 1-1. Series shifts now to Detroit. JV will be on the mound tomorrow. Big Poppy hitting that grand slam, game-tying grand slam, and just went downhill from there. So Max Scherzer's beautiful performance gets wasted there. So much to talk about, though. Let's talk real quickly. High school football, Alex, you headed out to a game on Friday. So much going on. We're going to give you a score update. But, Alex, tell us where you're headed and what happened.
Yeah, Lucas Barner trying to maintain Everett's attempt at the crown this year. But Grand Ledge, they started off 0-3, and they were basically starting their playoff appearance in Game 4 of the regular season. Starting off 0-3, a much better team than the record shows, but a close one up until halftime. I believe it was 19-21 Grand Ledge, and then Grand Ledge just pulled away. 41-19 was the final. They held Lucas Barner three times when they went for it on fourth down. This is just from memory. I just remember seeing Lucas. What they did was they pulled a lot of the defensive backs up. Lucas doing a lot of flat passes, a lot of screen passes. And the Grand Ledge defense just came through huge, Al. It was a good game. We'll have more up on that on the WKR website very soon in the next few days. So Stay tuned for some highlights, listeners.
Man, every game we've been to has been a complete blowout.
Yeah.
This is
except the
man.
Holy East Lansing game.
Yeah, and I wasn't even at it. You were at that one.
That was an overtime thriller.
I was at DeWitt and Hazlitt that week, and you went out to that one. Yeah, that was crazy, man. Well, you're a lucky brother because I haven't been to a close one yet, man. But just real quick, give you some score updates. DeWitt tops Owosso on Friday, 42-0. Pomona Westphalia beats Fowler 25-0.
League of Unbeatens right there.
Yeah, League of Unbeatens, I know, right? Lansing-Sexton and East Lansing. Sexton tops East Lansing, 47-21 there. Haslin to Fowlerville. Haslin tops Fowlerville 27-6. Holt tops Okemos 35-25. Ithaca, here we go again, 42-6.
Yeah, they're real. They're
just
for real.
This is just,
it's like a broken record.
Right,
historically
every week.
They're great though.
Just every week they top Saginaw Lutheran Seminary 42-6. There, Homer tops Springport 48-7. I get to a few more here. Bath and Dansville was close, 27-24. Bath tops Dansville. And Jackson topped Lansing Eastern. Lansing Eastern really struggling this year. 52-22. Jackson tops Lansing Eastern in that one. So we'll have that game on our website. Grand Ledge and Everett. You talk to Matt Bird, right, Alex?
Yeah, talked to Bird. Yep. And
Birdman. That's what I call him.
You call him the Birdman. Yeah, I mean, Bird was just saying that after the 0-3. They knew it was on, and just very proud of the way they played and contained Lucas Barner being the best in the area, according to Berg. So,
good stuff there. So, yeah, that'll be on our WKAR website if you want to see post-game coverage of that one. All right, Lions and Browns, guys. The Lions, they topped the Cleveland Browns 31-17. Brandon Whedon, he went 292 yards, threw two touchdowns, had two interceptions. If you look at the Lions, Matthew Stafford, he was 25-43 for 248 yards, four touchdowns, just one interception. Very impressive win for the Lions, seeing as though how that first half went. First half, you know, shaking your head, sitting there, whoa, this Lions team is, you know, what's going on here? And that second half came. And they look like a totally two. It was two different teams in the first and second half. And I know you, Matt, you and I and Aaron were talking before the game how, you know, that was kind of a trend for them two seasons ago. Because I remember I didn't recall that until we were talking about it. I'm like, yeah, that was 2 years ago where the Lions, they would just historically just go out in the first half, and you're like, what did they even show up for the game? And then the second half, is just they just turn it to another level. And that was one of those cases this past weekend. So what do you guys take away from the Lions game, though?
Well, the first half was frustrating on, you know, in just about every facet. You know, they had, I believe, 6 drops in the first half, just wide receivers not making plays. Calvin was dropping balls. Chris Durham was dropping balls. Everybody, no one could hold on to the ball.
Right.
And on the other side, Cleveland was running it down our throats. I mean, they were moving the ball on the Lions front four with ease. And then, you know, we go into the halftime break, things turn around. Guys start catching the ball. Joseph Fourier starts catching the ball.
Yeah, he's got some dance moves, too.
Joseph Fourier, star of the game.
Yeah, he is.
And, I mean, 3 touchdown passes, or catches, rather, on 3 catches. I mean, the guy is just efficient in the red zone. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Matt Stafford played – I thought he played a pretty solid game.
Yeah, I thought it was a very solid game.
I mean, you take away those drops and his percentages go up a little bit.
Right.
He looked in control the whole time. His interception was kind of a fluky play.
Yeah,
it got tipped up and the guy picked it off in the end zone.
Did you see that Brandon Weeden interception?
Probably the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Like, it has to be on the not top 10.
Oh, my goodness.
He just flips the thing. And no jersey is around. No Cleveland jersey is around. He just said, here. Here's an interception. It was the funniest thing.
I was watching it with buddies, and my friend said he looked like someone playing 500 who was tired of being the thrower, and he just wanted to do something else. It was, what is he doing?
Yeah, exactly. It was one of those moments you just sit there like, what? Is this, I don't know. Was he getting paid to just give it? I don't know. I have no idea.
Credit to Levy for making a play on the ball, though.
Yeah. He had definitely a heads-up play there. Calvin Johnson, you know, he looked to be laboring still from that knee injury. That's why I don't think he was that big of a factor throughout that game. Reggie Bush, he finished with 135 total yards. 121 of those 135 yards came in the second half. So he was a totally different man in that second half. But, yeah, Calvin Johnson, that balky right knee, hopefully he gets better. Cleveland now just went from, I think, it just shows you how important that QB position is, because they just went from a team that you look at and say, wow, you know what I mean? How good can they be? And then, you know, that happens too, that injury to Brian Hoyer happens where he tears at ACL, and you're sitting there with Brandon Weeden just making not top 10 plays, you know what I mean? So it's one of those things where the Lions definitely took advantage of it in the second half. And, that speech at halftime by,
Tulloch?
Yeah, Tulloch, yeah. Stephen Tulloch gave a speech at halftime that you know, with something like from Gladiator or something. And they came out with a totally different mindset. And Chris Durham said of that speech that it was just, quote, team stuff. So, I don't know. He didn't give too much insight into what was said during the speech. But, yeah, great win for the Lions, I thought. Great way to respond to that adversity, because we almost went from saying, oh, the same old Lions, to, okay, now our perception has changed a little bit. Because I thought I was going to be singing the same old song here on Monday talking about this game. So, great win for them, though. So, again, you want to comment on that? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Hey, Matt, how we doing in Pick'ems, man? Who's leading?
It's a tight race.
Ooh. Is it?
I am leading. I am leading with 29 points. Al, you're in second at 26. And Alex, you are bringing up the rear with 24. But you're not out of it.
You're not out of it by a long shot. Still very close. Very, very close.
Still waiting on the championship series from last week. We'll figure that out later. I took the Dodgers. You guys took the Cardinals. Yes. So you're looking good there.
Yes, looking good.
So there's some ground to be made up for sure.
Right, definitely. So what do we got this week, man?
This week we're gonna start out. We've got I've got 4 games for us today. We'll pick the rest on Friday for the NFL. We're gonna start out with MSU hosting Purdue next Saturday.
Alex,
who you got?
Man. You can see I'm a little confused about the score here. You can hear the air in the mic. Man, I'm gonna go 28-13 Michigan State.
28-13 MSU. All right, I'm gonna go 24-17 MSU.
24-17.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
I am going to go 31-6 MSU.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right.
I mean, Purdue just lost to Nebraska at home 44-7.
They did.
They are the worst. They're the worst team in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
But you can't take anybody lightly.
You can't. Tread lightly, as Walt would say. We have a caller on line 1, Andrew from Lansing. How you doing, Andrew? Welcome to Current Sports.
How you doing, guys?
Very good.
Hey, I kind of cut the show a little late. Did you guys happen to talk about the race on Saturday? Keselowski winning that race, despite having the jack wedged underneath his car and going around the track once.
No, we didn't. No, we haven't talked about Brad. What happened exactly?
Well, I was hanging out with some buds, and we were flipping back between that and the baseball game, and I'm not much of a NASCAR fan. They are, and I just happened to notice, I thought, what is that? It looks like a jack stuck underneath the car. Keselowski was coming out of a pit stop, and somebody forgot to pull the jack out from underneath the car.
Really? You know, we're going to find that video. We're going to try to post that to our Facebook page today. No, we did not see that, Andrew. That's Keselowski, I think he won his at Charlotte, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
But that jack was toast, man. It's not like they were going to take the time to change the rubber on that jack.
Well, we'll find that video. We'll put it on our Facebook page. Thanks a lot, Andrew.
All right, thanks, guys.
Wait, did you guys catch it? I didn't see that.
I saw a highlight of it, but no, I didn't see a lot.
Did you?
Whatever works, Brad. Whatever works.
Whatever works, man. That's Brad's first win of the year, actually, at Charlotte, North Carolina. Fun stuff there. We got to get that. We got to check out that video. All right, what else we got, Matt?
All right, Michigan, Indiana.
I'm going with Michigan. I think they'll rebound off the loss to Penn State. They got a little fire under them now. Give me Michigan.
Give me your score, too.
Score 28 to
14. 28-14. Alex.
Let's say 31-19, Michigan.
Okay.
All right. I think Michigan's going to win. I think it's going to be a shootout, though. Indiana can score.
They can score. They got that fast-paced offense.
And Michigan's defense.
Yeah, not great.
Didn't look great. Nope. I'm going to say it's going to be 45-31, Michigan.
Okay, gotcha.
All right, and then the last one, no score needed this one. It's the big matchup this weekend, Florida State at Clemson for the Battle of the ACC. Maybe inside track for a national title.
Clemson always just can't come. It's same with basketball. They always just...
They start so hot.
They start very hot, and then as the season goes on, it's like, okay, what happened? You know, so.
Is this the year, Alex?
You going with Clemson?
I'm going to go with Clemson this year.
You're still in my pick. I'm going with Clemson as well, man.
Well, that makes three of us.
We're all going with Clemson.
Home field advantage.
Yeah.
Senior QB.
Right, right.
I think Clemson looks pretty darn good.
Although, like you said,
Alex, they always look good to start the season in football and basketball. I feel like there were 2 years in basketball where they started out like 17-0 and then would miss the tournament. And it's like, oh my gosh.
Like, what in the world happened?
How is that even possible?
Right, exactly.
All right, so that's 3-for-3 taking Clemson. All right, NFL Thursday night game, Seattle at Arizona.
Oh, give me Seattle.
They're hot.
Give me Russell Wilson right now. Yes, they are.
I'm going to take Seattle too.
Yep.
Can't go wrong.
Me too. That defense versus Carson Palmer.
Yeah,
home field be darned. I think Seattle's going to get it done.
Right. So I think I did pretty well in my NFL picks this week, too. How about Tom Brady, clutch with no one. He has no one to throw to. That was a clutch performance there. My Cowboys got a 31-16 win over Washington. Was very pleased with that. Monday night, tonight, you have the Colts and Chargers, I believe, right? That should be a very, very interesting game. Again, that's at 8:30 p.m. tonight. And we have to sing, Alex. We gotta do this. Well, I mean, it's October 14th now, so we got to do that this week. We will be singing.
Is it singing rap? Is it the rap or is it?
Matt says between a rap battle and a lovely romantic, sensual,
heartfelt duet. It's gonna be magical. Guys.
And we still don't know.
Still don't know.
Hey, as Al Slammer once said, it might be the Al and Alex show this week.
Yeah, that's what's going to be. The Al and Al show this week. It's going
to
be lovely.
You guys are going to take off straight to the top, the top of the charts.
My voice, though. I got to get my voice back at least before we sing, man, because my voice is not where it's supposed to be right now. I'm getting sick. I got to combat this thing. But all right, fun stuff. We'll see how the week plays out, guys. Before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants, Alex Shard and Matt Ledke, engineer, Aaron Young. Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKR. I want to remind you all that, yes, Current Sports TV airs each and every Thursday night at 10 p.m. To this week's guest is Carlton Valentine. Carlton is was a longtime coach at Lansing Sexton High School, basketball coach, excuse me. His two sons, Drew and Denzel. Denzel plays for the MSU basketball team. Drew just finished up at Oakland University. But, yes, Carlton Valentine will be on this week's edition of Current Sports TV. If you want to be in the live audience on Wednesday night at 6, go to WKAR.org to sign up. Again, that's WKAR.org. It's free. Come on out. We're also giving away two tickets there. All right? So, try to win some tickets, guys. Call in. You know, we love seeing your face here at Current Sports. We love you guys. So, again, WKAR.org to sign up for that. You listen to Current Sports with me. I'm Martin on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day and be easy, people.